what you stand for. So, Mary, we'll start.
Thanks, Brian. Everybody hear me? There we go. Now, this will be interesting because I can't see my slides.
Would you like to be here?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I have a hard time knowing where I'm at. My background is I'm a food scientist, which leads me into a lot of technical details about food. And this is my role here is really to talk about some of the technical details. And hopefully we'll generate some questions. The current estimate is about 70% of our foods contain, and this is conventional foods, contain some sort of genetically engineered ingredient. And that's not just a commodity ingredient like soy or corn, but as you'll see as I go through, it's a lot of little ingredients, what we're calling minor ingredients, that are contained in ingredients in your foods that you might not be aware of. GMOs are not allowed in organics. I mean, that's in the final regulations. And we have our government bodies telling us that GMO is the safe harbor. If consumers want a choice that does not contain GMOs, they have organic. Well, that presupposes that we don't contaminate organic with GMOs, and I know you'll hear more about that from the other speakers as well. They use the term adventitious contamination, and in particular with Starlink corn, which was a GE corn that was only approved for animal use and got mixed up with human food. The company Adventist tried to get the contamination described by the government as adventitious, which would have meant that there wouldn't have been any recall of any product that contained Starlink. And thankfully, they did not get that through the government. But typically what will happen is background contamination, whether it be pesticides or GMOs, the industry will take the tack that this was inescapable. Background, and therefore it should just be taken into account. And of course the global market doesn't buy that argument at all. In fact, they just found Starlink again in a couple of loads of corn going to Japan, and so the problem doesn't go away. I think the industry thought Starlink was gone, and it's certainly not gone. And many food processing materials, ingredients used in processed foods, are made from ingredients that are not identity preserved. And by identity preserved, I mean that the source of the material is known to be non-GE or GE and kept separate. Typically, our food system is of such large scale that everything gets blended together in transportation, in trucking, in pipelines, and that sort of thing. So identity preservation is quite difficult for the industry to do based on the current infrastructure. So what ingredients might contain GMOs? Well, as Brian said, soy, corn, and canola are our primary food ingredients, although cottonseed is also a GM material, although cottonseed isn't used as much in organic or natural foods. But in soy, you see any ingredient that might come from soy oil, soy protein, soy flour have the word soy. So if you see those on an ingredient statement, you would know that those could potentially be GE. But if you saw vitamin E or lecithin, and you're not a techie food scientist like I am, you might not know that those things come from soy. So it's similar to the allergen issue in terms of allergen labeling. We don't have true labeling. Now, that's just on the ingredient that you see on the side panel. And the same goes for corn syrup, maltodextrin, citric acid, corn oil, cornstarch. I mean, we were talking earlier, Jeannie didn't know citric acid came from corn. Well, not many people do, but it does come from corn as a starting material. And then canola oil, typically we don't have a lot of processed ingredients from canola. But these are the things that you would look for on the side panel. But what we do at Wild Oats is we look at what we call the sub-ingredients. The FDA laws for regulation of ingredient listings say that certain ingredients do not have to be listed if they're part of an ingredient blend. So something that's called natural flavoring could have several ingredients, as in the bottom, maltodextrin, natural flavoring, silicon dioxide. That's actually the sub-ingredient statement, which the manufacturer has to put on the container of material, but it doesn't have to appear on the finished product, because those materials, maltodextrin and silicon dioxide, are considered processing aids, and they're at a very low percentage. So now you see maltodextrin appear in a sub-ingredient statement. So this can happen with flavorings, colorings, spice blends, often have oils, or flours, wheat, flour. Wheat is not currently genetically engineered, but if we approve it, then we'll have the same problem with wheat. Preservative blends, and enzymes. Enzymes can come from genetically modified bacterial strains, and therefore enzymes can also be a source of GE. So when we look at non-GMO compliance, and at Wild Oats, we look at the statement that's on the product, whether or not the statement is genetically modified or non-GMO or not from genetically modified ingredients. We'll ask the manufacturer who makes that claim, is the ingredient really, first of all, is the ingredient really a GMO potential ingredient? And if you're really a techie and you're interested in the nitty-gritty, OMRI, Organic Materials Review Institute, has a decision tree that takes you through a criteria as to whether or not an ingredient would be considered GE, especially in related to organic processing. If it's just a normal claim of non-GMO, we would say, do you have a certification that the product or the ingredient that the ingredients in your products are both identity preserved and non-GMO? And it's very, very difficult for manufacturers. Many ingredients have to be sourced from identity preserved sources, which means for something like citric acid, you usually have to go to a source like an ADM plant in Ireland, because there are no ADM plants currently in the U.S. that can give you identity preserved non-GMO citric acid, but you can source it from Europe. So it's quite difficult on some of these ingredients. So what are your alternatives? Well, your alternatives are to source from IP and non-GMO sources. And other choices are to use non-GMO alternatives. So if you are planning to use canola oil and you have difficulty trying to find non-GMO canola, which is a bigger and bigger and bigger problem, given that canola is very easily contaminated, you might use a different oil in your application. You can use, instead of cornstarch, you could use a different starch. Potato or tapioca or some other kind of starch might work in your application. Or non-GMO sweeteners. Corn syrup is a particular concern of mine, in that in the natural products industry, we're seeing more and more and more products that are appearing with corn syrup as the first ingredient. And there are other alternative sweeteners, such as evaporated cane and some others that are non-GMO and also less refined than purified corn syrup. I wanted to mention an industry task force that was put together to talk about this whole testing and threshold issue. I mean, what do we really mean when we say non-GM or non-GMO? And especially in terms of international trade, I think there's and Jeannie will talk about some of these threshold questions that are up. But the industry got together and said, we don't really know the quality of the testing, in other words, the reliability of testing at these low levels, because it's very important because there's economic decisions being made on these crops, whether or not the threshold is 0.1% or 0.3%, and then how reliable is the testing at those very low levels. And so there's what's called a ring trial going on, where several laboratories have actually analyzed the same samples, and it's in the midst of statistical analysis right now. And the task force is hoping to make a recommendation sometime in the future. But one of the things to make note of is testing is not the only solution, because you can have a product like soybean oil that doesn't contain any protein, and the only way to detect GE ingredients is if there's protein present, because they are proteins themselves. So you can have a very purified product like soybean oil that would show up as non-GMO, but it could have come from a mixed crop. So you also have to make sure that there's documentation that the product has been identity preserved before you purchase the product. I put together another slide before we get to that. Wild Oats, a couple of years ago, along with Trader Joe's and Whole Foods, made a pledge not to use genetically modified ingredients in their private label. And we continue to stand by that pledge. However, what I've found since I've joined the company is we definitely need to beef up our documentation with our vendors on this issue, because the market changes, their sourcing changes. It's a very difficult process in order to keep up with this. In addition, from a natural product standpoint, not just organics, because we know organics aren't allowed GMOs are not allowed in organics. I'd like to see the natural products industry, meaning vendors who sell through our channel, actually make a commitment that they would use non-GE ingredients by X date. And I'm in the process of putting together an industry advisory group that would help us determine what that date would be, because I think we need to also put some emphasis on how is our channel of distribution, meaning natural and organic food stores, how are we different than conventional supermarkets? And we know that we have, one of the difficulties with this whole labeling question is we know we have ingredients, products that contain genetically modified ingredients. So if products were to require to be labeled, a number of products in our stores, not our private label, but a number of other vendors' products would have to be labeled as containing GE, which is not what we want from a consumer standpoint. And then finally, I put together a few resources for those that want to try to source, and you can't read the second line, so I'll read that for you. The non-GMO source is a publication that's published in Iowa, and you can get their information via web search. The second thing is supposed to say www.truefood.org, which is the Greenpeace website, in which you can make, they have listings of companies who have made non-GE pledges, so they have a listing of products. And then there's also a list from Genie that's available that has things like where to get non-GE lecithin and citric acid and flavorings and that sort of thing. So with that, I'll turn it over to Jeannie to talk, and look forward to your questions later. Thank you.
So what I thought I would talk about is sort of give you a lay of the land in terms of what's happening with genetically engineered food at the international level, talk about the sort of state of the biotech industry, and then talk about what's happening here in the U.S. with the FDA and labeling and all of that. Greenpeace works on the issue of genetically engineered agriculture in Europe, in the United States, in Canada, Mexico, Argentina, and Southeast Asia. And we've had a tremendous amount of success, as I'm sure you've already heard about, in Europe, where consumers have pushed really hard to reject genetically engineered food. And consequently, the government, the European Union, is sort of playing catch-up to where consumers are on this issue. And as well as there are a number of other countries that are sort of playing catch-up with consumers in terms of their sentiments towards genetically engineered food. Over 30 countries now have labeling legislation. So in other words, they require when you walk into your supermarket and Kellogg's, if they're using genetically engineered corn in their cornflakes, they have to tell you. But it turns out if you walk into any majority of supermarkets within the European Union countries, it's very difficult to find products that are labeled, because the truth is that multinational food companies have figured out how to source non-genetically engineered ingredients for their products sold in Europe and in other countries, but not for their products sold in the United States. Some of the countries that include labeling requirements are Australia, New Zealand. China has recently put forward regulations on labeling of genetically engineered ingredients. Russia, Japan, South Korea, Croatia. And so you begin to wonder why, and we're supposed to be one of the great democracies, why we don't have labeling in this country. One of the big battles that is upcoming on this issue is an issue of our trade, is with the European Union. The Bush administration is making more and more pronouncements that they're going to potentially seek a WTO petition against the European Union because they have a de facto moratorium on the plantings of new genetically engineered crops, and they've just strengthened their labeling laws. And it still needs to go through the European Parliament, which will probably happen in this spring. But the EU has done a number of things. One is their labeling will be required to label not on testing. So they're not going to require food companies to do testing to detect whether or not there are GMOs in their products directly, but it's based on traceability. In other words, there needs to be testing and paper trails that begin at the farm and work its way up the food chain as that corn gets processed into corn syrup and then makes its way into your cereal. There needs to be testing and paperwork that goes along with that. There's a zero threshold, no tolerance threshold for non-authorized genetically engineered crops. So, for example, Monsanto's YieldGuard corn can be grown here in the United States. It's not authorized within the European Union, so then that presents problems for corn producers here. Another thing about the EU legislation is that tolerance for labeling is 0.5%. So if your product contains less than 0.5% of GMOs, then you don't have to label. If it's above that, you have to put a label on there that your product contains genetically engineered ingredients. The labeling legislation also goes now for animal feed. So not only does food for human consumption have to be labeled, but animal feed also has to be labeled. Greenpeace and a number of other organizations have been working to pressure McDonald's and Burger King and other to purchase meat from farms where they don't use genetically engineered animal feed. And that's been quite successful. McDonald's and Burger King and others in Europe have said that they won't use meat that's been produced from genetically engineered animal feed. But there will not be labeling of animal products. So if you have meat that was produced from a cow that was fed genetically engineered animal feed and you as the consumer are interested in that issue, there's no labeling that's required for you. So that's sort of the EU standards, or will be the new EU standards. There are a number of countries that are pushing to maintain the moratorium on the planting of new genetically engineered crops. And Robert Zoellick, the U.S. trade representative, seems to be pushing closer and closer to taking the EU to the WTO to say that their requirements of labeling and their de facto moratorium are a trade barrier and therefore are against WTO rules. Of course, there are lots of politics about that. Certainly, war is a factor. We need the EU to support us on war if we're going to do that. And so it's not clear if the Bush administration is going to go forward with a trade challenge on the EU before a potential war. Other international issues, as was mentioned, Starlink corn has made its way again to Japan. How many of you have heard of Starlink corn? Great. Okay, many of you. So it was the genetically engineered corn that was not approved for human consumption because of concerns that it could cause food allergies. It was grown in this country and was supposed to only go towards animal feed. Well, it turns out the EPA didn't actually go out and talk to farmers and see that the corn wasn't then taken off to be processed into food, and lo and behold, it ends up in our Taco Bell taco shells and our Safeway tortilla chips, and over 300 food products were recalled. And during the Starlink scandal, Japan said that it will not accept U.S. corn, U.S. Starlink corn. And so there was a huge effort on the part of the USDA to try and stop any shipments of Starlink corn to Japan. Well, it turns out they've slipped, and Starlink has ended up in Japan again, and now Japan is saying they're reconsidering whether or not they're going to accept any U.S. corn. As you can imagine, that would have a huge impact on corn farmers in the U.S., and I think, again, shows the inability of the industry to segregate properly on many of these crops. So what does all this mean? What's sort of the state of the genetic engineering industry? It's mixed right now. Monsanto is responsible for 80% of the genetically engineered seeds on the market right now. And in December, their CEO resigned on news that their profits are down 50%. Right. That's one worth clapping for. Most of their sales actually come from their sale of Roundup, the herbicide. It doesn't come from genetically engineered seed. They're actually not really making that much money on genetically engineered seed, but they've bet the farm, so to speak, on their Roundup Ready genetically engineered seeds. So Roundup Ready corn, Roundup Ready soy, Roundup Ready canola. And also, towards the end of 2002, news came out that there is increased weed resistance to glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup. Part of the studies were commissioned by Syngenta, Monsanto's competitor, but there are other university researchers who are finding that as well, that there are more and more weeds that are becoming resistant to Roundup, and that could have a huge impact on Monsanto and their plans. Monsanto, as you can imagine, is arguing against that there isn't significant glyphosate resistance, but that's certainly not what's being played out in many farms. In Canada, for example, canola farmers, both conventional and organic, for the conventional farmers, they're finding weeds in their fields that are resistant to Roundup and are switching to more toxic herbicides. The other news about Monsanto is their parent company, Pharmacia, spun them off at the end of 2002. So they sold them off because they were concerned about the economic risks of having agrobiotech in their portfolio. Monsanto is now independent. They were running out of cash, so Pharmacia gave them a loan for some money. So it's not clear what their future is. But after their CEO resigned, they went forward to get approval for genetically engineered wheat commercialization, both in the United States and in Canada. Genetically engineered wheat, if commercialized, could be devastating. We could go from 70% of our processed foods containing genetically engineered ingredients to close to 100% if genetically engineered wheat is put on the market. So there are farmers and environmentalists, consumers who are organizing in North Dakota and Montana and Canada and Oregon to look at state legislation to put in place moratoriums and barriers to commercialization of GE wheat. Because if GE wheat were commercialized, farmers could lose their export markets. The other big player on genetically engineered crops is Aventis. They were responsible for the Starlink corn. They lost close to $1 billion because of the Starlink scandal. They had to buy up a bunch of corn and essentially pay off that disaster. They were bought up by Bayer, a European chemical company. They also make aspirin and pharmaceuticals, a bunch of stuff. Bayer has just petitioned also towards the end of last year, along with Monsanto, for two different products to commercialize genetically engineered rice. And Bayer has stated in California that they're interested in doing airplane seeding of rice, which, as you can imagine, would just be a contamination nightmare if that were to happen. Another big player on the scene is Syngenta. Syngenta, as some of you may have heard of, they were formerly Novartis. Novartis spun off their ag biotech division as well. A lot of, it's interesting, a lot of these pharmaceutical companies, biotech companies, are trying to distance themselves economically from genetically engineered agriculture because it's not clear what the future is and it's looking murky. Syngenta had a five-year deal with UC Berkeley, which some of you may have heard of, where they gave, it was either $20 or $25 million to UC Berkeley for research on new genetically engineered crops. That deal is ending this year, and Syngenta is so far has not moved forward to sign up again to give Berkeley money, and for that money, they are then given sort of first dibs on any patents that come out of that particular department. So that's sort of the state, a small picture at the state of the biotech industry. Things are not looking good for them, and I think what's interesting is that particularly in this country, there's beginning to be conventional farmer resistance to genetically engineered crops because it's not economically making sense. We're losing export markets, we're contaminating organics, yields are down compared to conventional varieties, pesticide use is up. At the end of the day, it's not only an ecological concern and disaster, but it's also economically, it doesn't make sense for the family farmer. In the U.S., coming back to the question of genetically engineered ingredients in our processed foods, back in 1992, the Food and Drug Administration deemed that genetically engineered food is substantially equivalent to conventional food. In other words, if you compare genetically engineered corn to conventional corn and you look at the mineral content, et cetera, the FDA decided, well, it's pretty much the same thing, so we're not going to require long-term health or environmental safety testing. Now, most recently, what the FDA has said is that they're not going to require mandatory labeling of genetically engineered food. It would be confusing for the consumer. It was interesting. They did some focus groups to find out how people reacted to different ways of talking about genetically engineered food. And they found that if you say genetically engineered or genetically modified, that people don't trust that as being safe. But if you call it made from bioengineered or biotechnology, that was okay, that people were less concerned about that because they weren't quite sure what that meant. So that's, FDA says if you want to label, if Kellogg's wanted to tell you that they're using genetically engineered corn in their cornflakes, they could tell you that. But they would prefer that they say that they're using products made from bioengineering or from biotechnology. FDA, and I'm sure Aaron will probably speak to this, has been sending letters to companies that aren't using genetically engineered ingredients and then put on their packaging GMO-free. And the letters are saying basically that labeling is misleading and that they have no clear rules on those types of labels. They recommend to the company that they no longer use GMO-free or genetically modified or genetically engineered. And Spectrum Oils, a number of different companies have received these letters. And this is basically the same thing that they did around bovine growth hormone. When Ben and Jerry's and others were labeling, saying that they're BGH-free, FDA said, "Well, we don't have a clear rule on this, but we think it's misleading." And then what then happened with bovine growth hormone is Monsanto then took companies to court, saying it's non-competitive, and they had to change their labels. So FDA is basically sort of setting up companies who are saying that they're GMO-free for potential lawsuits from the biotech industry. The FDA has said that if you say non-genetically engineered ingredients, that could be okay, but they don't like modified, they don't like organisms, and they don't like the word free on the labels. So on the consumer end of things, Greenpeace, along with many other organizations, the Organic Consumers Association, Genetic Engineering Action Network, came together and formed the GE Free Markets Coalition. We worked together to put pressure on Trader Joe's to remove genetically engineered ingredients from their products. We came together in January 2001. We tested some of their products. They came back positive for genetically engineered corn. And we sent some letters, made some phone calls to the company, and they refused to talk to us and said that, well, these, you know, we use whatever is on the market. The FDA says genetically engineered food is perfectly safe, so we're going to continue to use genetically engineered ingredients in our products. We disagreed with them about the safety of genetically engineered food, and so launched a public campaign where throughout California and increasingly on the East Coast, as they developed on the East Coast, people are in front of their stores picketing, petitioning, passing out leaflets, making phone calls, writing the store. And finally, in November of 2001, Trader Joe's announced that they would no longer use genetically engineered ingredients in their products. So we've moved on to bigger fish. The GE Free Markets Coalition launched in March of last year a national supermarket campaign targeted at Safeway, which owns Vons and Dominic's and a number of different stores across the U.S., as well as Shaw's Star Market in New England.
And Safeway Canada.
And they don't own Safeway Canada.
They don't?
They don't. They used to. We chose Shaw's and Star Market in New England because they're a large chain in that area, but they're also owned by a UK company called Sainsbury's, which has a no GMO policy for their products sold in the UK, but not for their products sold in the US. So there's become this sort of clear double standard where consumers, environmentalists in Europe have done an excellent job pushing back on this industry and saying we don't want genetically engineered food on our shelves, and they've responded. But we're not quite there yet in the U.S. But certainly we're seeing consumer resistance and awareness growing on this issue. So as part of that, we have the True Food Network, where we bring people together to put pressure on the food industry to remove genetically engineered ingredients from their products. We've also worked to put together a source book on how to source non-genetically engineered ingredients, because we understand that it's not enough just to beat up companies that we don't think are doing the right thing. We also have technical expertise where we can give people advice on how to find non-GMO soy lecithin, etc. And I brought some copies of that here. But I think at the end of the day, it's an interesting time. The biotech industry is not financially stable right now. There is growing consumer resistance in the United States. But yet we have the potential of genetically engineered wheat, genetically engineered rice, genetically engineered fruits and vegetables coming to this country and to others. And that's why we're hoping to continue to work with the GE Free Markets Coalition and with others to build up a stronger base of consumers, to build up resistance in this country and to win the type of successes that we're seeing elsewhere.
Aaron, do you want to stay up here or do you want to stay
Here?
Okay. Now we're going from one technology to another, so we'll see if it works.
Well, let me give you a hand.
There you go. Now the light's on here. Oh, there you go. That's bright. There's, after Aaron's talk, we'll line up for questions at the microphone, and there's material down here that various people have brought on GE.
Wondering where to start. I was just looking at one of our packages, and I noticed a quote here from Mahatma Gandhi: "We must become the change we want to be." I want to acknowledge the science that Mary has brought to this seminar today, and the activism which Jeannie represents with Greenpeace and other. Citizen-based, consumer-based activism, which is really bringing about change. It's only the people that can really bring about the change. And I feel that our company has been, which is comprised of people, of course, that we're also trying to bring about change. I'd like to quote something from one of my mentors, Sant Kripal Singh. He told me in 1972 in Dallas, Texas, when we were together with Frank Ford, who is the founder of Arrowhead Mills, Frank said to Kripal Singh, he said, "Sir, I was in politics and I ran against Lyndon Johnson because I felt he was a dishonest man, but I got out of politics because it was like a dog chasing his own tail." And then Sant Kripal Singhji replied, "To grow a blade of grass is more than a patriot's work." So I'd just like to say something about war, racism, intolerance, and genetically engineered foods. You know, it seems like a diabolical plot. But let's give peace a chance, and let's give nature a chance. Yes. And my father, he told me that, you know, a fundamental responsibility that I had was to leave the soil better than I found it. Next slide, please. Yes, hit it twice. My mother. I wanted to speak from first a personal kind of nostalgia, memory lane thing, just for a minute, and then I'll get into the economic side of genetic engineering.